And the stock market liked what they heard from the Fed last week, and they certainly didn't mind that it was followed by weaker than expected jobs data to make the point emphatic. Now, of course, we find ourselves in a strange sort of no man's land where it looks like equities are just almost possibly ready, but resisting frustratingly to make a convincing move into the last mile of a bullish reversal. And this is where we find ourselves as the week begins, and as we look at what might be the make or break catalyst to get some conviction on the board. Welcome. This is Macro Money. I'm Ilya Spivak, head of global macro here at Tasty Live. And we're going to go through the various macro waypoints here in the days ahead that are going to shape this narrative. But first, we'll take a look at what the markets gave us last week and do a bit of stage setting there to figure out what might be the interpretation that the price action itself is giving us. And then take a look at why there is any question at all about whether this rally can sustain. So let's take a look at the way that markets performed last week. And what we find here is another week of gains for equities, another week of losses for treasury yields, not surprising. Markets, of course, were seesawing after the Fed policy announcement. The Fed seemingly gave the markets exactly what they wanted, the dovish version of a hawkish pivot, if that makes any kind of sense at all. It was well expected that the Fed would adjust its tone and adjust its posturing toward fewer rate cuts this year. That much was a given. The question was what flavor of an adjustment there would be. Would it be there will be fewer cuts, but we're still biased to cuts, the most dovish version. We may not have the room to cut this year, the middle of the road version, and the we may consider rate hikes, or at least they are a symmetrical risk to policy expectations this year, the hawkish version. As it turns out, we got the dovish sort of tone from Fed Chair Jerome Powell, as well as the policy statement for the most part. Although it seemed like the policy statement really screamed about the focus on inflation, it also didn't seem to signal that the Fed feels like there's anything else to be done other than waiting, because policy, in their view, will eventually work at current settings to restart disinflation. So at this stage, the markets took that, were happy about it, at least while it was occurring. And then when the Fed stopped talking, all of the optimism evaporated. Stocks erased their intraday gains. The dollar ran away from its lows. And it wasn't until Friday's jobs report, which came out soggier than anticipated, incidentally, as we expected, did the markets finally say, okay, this means that there are more cuts back on the table. Now we are leaning more in the direction of two rather than one, maybe even questioning whether the one is going to happen going into the Fed. Markets ended last week essentially saying there's certainly one cut, and the probability of a second one is now closer to 50-50, as opposed to maybe the likelihood of one is less than 100%. That amounted to, on net, a shift from about 23 basis points at its most hawkish setting last week to about 40 basis points, 38 basis points going into Friday's close, and about 37 basis points today. So very little changed. On the whole, that amounts to a nearly 20 basis point shift, so nearly a full rate cuts worth of an adjustment. We can see yields fell last week, long end, the 10-year down 3.3%, 2-year down 3.6%. Stocks managed to finish the week with gains, albeit with more modest ones than the prior week. S&P here up a percent, or up a half a percent, rather. NASDAQ up almost a percent, but both of those mark slowdowns from the prior week's rallies. Crude oil has a standout sell-off, as it seems like a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas is drawing closer. The yen has an outsized run after the BOJ appears to intervene twice to prop it up. Generally, the dollar a little bit weaker, 0.6% gain for the euro, the benchmark counter for the dollar. But really all the action seemingly around this idea that more cuts are back on the table and the market has survived what could have been a hawkish Fed risk. And then this is where things get muddy. Because if we look at the way that the S&P 500 closed today, there is certainly no question that the Fed line in the sand was breached. So here we have the Fed going into it, the market sell off. Here's the Fed itself. We can see that there's a rally that completely falters into the close, as we've just discussed. Full seesaw back. We find a bit of footing, and then what NFP does is pushes us north of the Fed, or the peak just ahead of the Fed. But we just barely fail to close above it, and so there isn't invalidation Friday. Today, gains continue in relatively thin activity, but again, we run right into the bottom of the place where this topping pattern right here established the reversal. And so we effectively end the day directly on the dividing line between this is a correction and this is a new bullish reversal. The markets stop just a hair of finalizing what could be the bullish reversal, where really everything was seemingly there, but for one last little bit. It is curiously a similar situation in the bond market, where diminishing concerns about Fed rate cuts, more rate cuts coming into the system, give a lift on bonds. And we're looking at the 10-year here as a benchmark, but this appears essentially the same, broadly the same across maturities. Bonds come up and again get stuck at former support, now resistance, and run away from that break. And so we are left with a sort of strange sense of unease, whereby it seems like the market got exactly what it wanted. It seems like everything is lining up for another risk-on run now that concerns about a more hawkish Fed have receded, at least to some extent. We're not quite back to the Fed's March call for three cuts, but it's certainly looking much less worrying if you thought no cuts were coming, or that maybe even a hike could be put on the table. And yet the markets don't want to make the decisive push. And so looking ahead now, how this behaves at these levels, perhaps over the next several days, becomes a very critical sort of pace setting exercise for what this does next market-wide. And as it happens, the event risk on the macro front that we find in front of us this week is not so tremendously impactful, at least on the Fed side of the story. And so we end up with a bit of a different set of catalysts than we used to. And it'll be interesting to see how that, in the absence of US news, echoes back into these broader dynamics. We begin with a monetary policy announcement from the Reserve Bank of Australia, where there has been a dramatically hawkish repricing of expectations since the last time the central bank met in mid-March. We can see here at this point, the current rate is at 4.35. There are no cuts here at this point. Note that when we were looking at this back in March, back in February, the story really was about we're at least looking for one, maybe two cuts. So we can see here, over the course of this year, the expectation was that we'd get sub 4%, essentially implying that maybe what we're looking at here is something along the lines of at least one cut with optionality for a second. At this point, none of those cuts are in the forecast. Markets are looking for standstill from the RBA. And so with that in mind, there is a bit of risk to a surprise because this adjustment really only happened on the strength of one data point. The first quarter CPI report that came out on the 24th of April, and as if in one singular stair step, took cuts off the board. It came out a little bit hotter than expected. It was still close to a two-year low on inflation, but it was hotter than expected enough that markets said, right, that one cut that we had fully baked in here, the RBA is not going to have room for it. From here, how the RBA talks about what's going on should be very interesting because the economy itself is on relatively soft footing. We can see here looking at the Citigroup Economic Surprise Index from Australia, and it's hugging the zero line, but biased toward narrow disappointment on data outcomes after a string of weakening performance. We now are kind of stuck in no man's land, but tilting weaker relative to forecasts. We can see the latest reading here, negative 7.3. So with that in mind, we're maybe looking for RBA Governor Michelle Bullock to come out and say something along the lines of, listen, we're not cutting. We're probably not cutting soon. But the economy is weak, and so we can't take that off the table, and our bias isn't to hike from here. It's to stay put, waiting for the cut signal to emerge, essentially. And with that in mind, there could be some rethinking of just how much of this hawkish shift makes sense, and whether economic conditions can really justify doing absolutely nothing on rates this year. So with that in mind, a bit of a dovish adjustment might weigh on the Aussie dollar, but more importantly, start to open a conversation about global economic conditions, which is perhaps the reason why stocks are a bit reticent to make their run here. The reason that we got the dovish rethink in Fed policy odds toward the end of last week was because U.S. economic data was weaker than expected. That's in an environment where the U.S. has been far and away the pillar of economic growth for the better part of a year and a half. Whereas conditions in China, conditions in the Eurozone remain weak. If the U.S. is finally stumbling, if all those rate hikes are finally catching up and the business cycle in the U.S. is indeed starting to turn, especially considering that NFP report followed about 2 weeks of deteriorating U.S. economic performance relative to forecasts, then we are entering into a place for the global economy where recession fears may well get put back on the table. Because if the U.S. is finally slowing, yes, it means more Fed rate cuts. But also, the global economy doesn't have any other leg to stand on. Everything else looks like it's not going to make up for a U.S. downturn on the growth front. And so, if the conversation from the RBA here is worried and tilting in the direction of, well, we're not going to hike, but we're certainly not meaningfully tilted into a hawkish direction. We're certainly wanting to be cutting given where the economy is. We just need inflation to give us that shot. Then perhaps a very different conversation starts to emerge. If active speculation on where the Fed is going isn't where we are, and now it's time, given what the Fed has told us, given that it's been baked in, to assess the landscape. It is a growth concern that might reemerge. The same narrative continues as we get some data out of China. Here we're looking for imports and exports to return narrowly to positive growth. They've, of course, been anemic for the better part of two and a half years now. Both have been trending lower as China's reopening from COVID and its performance during the pandemic wildly disappointed expectations. At this point, there's been a parallel decline on both sides of the external trade ledger as China loses market share, as supply chains shift, and as it struggles to rebuild momentum. We're also going to get a set of inflation numbers where things are expecting to look a little bit better on wholesale inflation. PPI seen at a relatively slower pace of decline at negative 2.3%. CPI seen holding steady at 0.1%. So kind of positive, but basically zero. And here, again, soggy economic data recently. A bit of a weakening, as we can see, relative to forecasts. And so if this data turns out a little bit weaker than expected, we again start to have the same conversation. Are we perhaps getting into a situation here where the risk starts to be that there is a global downturn afoot? Because if the U.S. economy is flagging, as the jobs data seems to suggest, and as other recent data seems to imply, then perhaps we are getting into a situation where there needs to be an inflationary concern that gives way to a growth concern. And if we're done actively speculating on the Fed, at least for a couple weeks, it is how that digests into the overall risk sentiment stew that might be detrimental here. From there, we switch forward to the Bank of England, which is also expected to have a monetary policy announcement this week. Again, we are looking at a situation where there's been a hawkish shift, albeit not nearly as dramatic as what's happened with Australia. Here, we're still looking for cuts this year, but we can see that the pace has significantly flattened relative to where we were in February, relative to where we were in March. The markets now see a much shallower path down in rates from 5.25 down to basically 4.75. So amounting to essentially 50 basis points in cuts with slight optionality for a third. In fact, we can see right here, markets are now baking in 52 basis points in easing. So as we say, two cuts at 25 apiece and a slight possibility for a little extra. And we can see that as we've had moderating expectations for cuts out of the U.S., so too we've seen moderation everywhere because, of course, as ever, U.S. rates are defining for the entire global economy because the dollar is such a ubiquitous unit of commercial exchange. And so we were sitting at something closer to six cuts at the beginning of the year, and we're now down to just two. The Bank of England, on the other hand, might think that this is a bit light because inflation, for its part, has been showing signs of broadening progress. So at this point, we're down to 3.2% on headline CPI, but perhaps most importantly, the makings of it show broadening disinflation. In fact, if we look at the component parts from the last set of numbers here, what we find is that food, which was the main catalyst, has essentially fallen back to a middle of the pack role. In 2023, this was the reason inflation was up. You can see it in no uncertain terms here. This was it right here. Before that, it was energy. This is the housing, utilities, and fuels component. That, of course, includes oil and gas. So in 2022, inflation was about this. In 2023, it was about food as this receded. And now it looks like we're getting into a place where the last kind of bastions of where inflation lives are in discretionary spending areas such as recreation and hospitality, which should start to give way in a generally weaker economic environment over time. So as we get there, this seems like the kind of an environment where the Bank of England might be ready to ponder cuts more actively. Now, as we can see here from the based in expectations, we're looking for the first cut to appear by August. So this is where we get the move from five and a quarter to five. Here's where it's fully baked in. And then another one somewhere November, December, certainly by December, it looks to be there. So the Bank of England votes on policy on a one policymaker, one vote basis, and there's nine of them. So at this point, if we look at the latest tally, we had no votes for a hike, one vote for a cut, eight votes to hold steady. If that becomes less so an 8-1 steady vote and moves to a 7-2 steady vote, and you get at least one more vote for a cut as a consequence of what we've seen on the inflation front here, that might well give the British pound a knockback and again raise this question about global growth. And the idea that at this stage, it isn't the sticky bits of inflation in most of the world outside the US that are of concern, and it's because the business cycle is turning, because those economies are weak. And if the US is going to be weak alongside them finally, having been very resilient the past year and a half, 2 years, then we need to have a very serious conversation about where the overall global economy is going, which is not the kind of environment in which stocks might find themselves happy to keep marching higher, no matter what happens with the rate cut outlook. And finally, closing out the week, we get a little bit of U.S. economic data to keep the Fed story alive. The University of Michigan survey of U.S. consumer confidence is coming out, and we can see this has been an excellent indicator for exactly what's been going on in the U.S. economy and how it's ended up being so resilient. Since about the middle of 2022, a few months after the Fed started its rate hike cycle, inflation expectations have been falling. In the gray bars here, you see one-year inflation expectations. This, of course, was also the indicator that suggested in 2021 that the Fed was wrong about inflation being more transitory than not and set the stage for rate hikes. So this is a really very powerful indicator through this cycle, powerful set of indicators through this cycle. It's been getting things early a lot. And what you see here is a steady decline in inflation expectations mirrored by a steady increase in consumer confidence. And you can see here that really since the beginning of this year, we've kind of tinkered near comparable levels on this. And where that is, basically the highest consumer confidence numbers that we've seen in 3 years. So clearly the situation is looking fairly chipper. Now, if some of the recent inflation numbers, the ones that had us worried that the Fed is going to be a little bit more hawkish, if those numbers start to show up here in 1 year inflation expectations, and rather than kind of sitting around this familiar range, plus or minus 3%. The expectation is 3.1. If this has one of these pops that we see here along the way, and as a consequence, sentiment comes in, which, by the way, would be consistent with the soggier messaging from recent U.S. economic data. You can see here we've actually slipped below the zero line on this surprise index here. If that's where this is going, then the Fed might start to get concerned about sticky inflation and actually become less inclined to cut. And that could be something that the market responds negatively to, but that's on Friday and some ways away, with lots of repositioning potential ahead of that. And that is macro money for today. As ever, we are here Monday through Thursday, right after Overtime, a show that I co-host with Dylan Radigan and Chris Vecchio, looking at the Wall Street close and where that might leave markets going forward. Back on with Chris for Futures Power Hour on Fridays, on with Victor for The Price of Truth on Wednesdays, back on with Victor and Tom for First Call on Sundays, writing for the News and Insights portion of tastylive.com, and opining on the platform formerly known as Twitter, at Ilya Spivak. Thanks very much for joining. Good luck out there this week. See you tomorrow.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered